Welcome to The Listening Way, a place for gentle conversations on how listening shapes our way of being in the world. I'm Dusk from The Listening Squad, where we believe that every person needs to be heard. The Listening Way is made on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and Bunurong land. We acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander custodians of this land and their deep wisdom and practice of listening. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. In this episode, we explore the listening way of Sue Ann Hunter. Sue Ann is a proud Wurundjeri and Noongar Illum Warang woman, committed to self-determination and advocating for the rights of all First Nations peoples. Sue Ann has just been appointed to the Yuruk Justice Commission as one of five commissioners. Her way of being in the world is as a facilitator of healing. Sue Ann shares with us how to create safety for people, how to really hear people's stories, and how to honour them. This conversation is full of such deep wisdom that Sue Ann so generously shares. I'm so excited to share it with you now. Welcome, Sue Ann. Well, thank you so much for being here.
You are more than welcome.
Oh, I'd love to start by hearing from you your strongest memory of listening.
Yeah, I've been thinking about what, because I've heard a lot of stories from children and from adults and friends and family, but my strongest one is when I sit on country next to Badger Creek, where sort of near where my nan was born on the mission, and just listen, and the sound of that creek and the birds and the, you know, and not trying to figure out what everything is, but just being in that space is powerful for me. It's really, it just feels like something's washed over me, takes, you know, all the stress, all the, you know, just takes everything away. And I would think for me, that's my most powerful sort of listening moment.
Beautiful. How long have you been sitting at that place for?
So whenever I get to go up there, because we've had lockdown, haven't been able to, but I remembered then we did ceremony up there once, and so I was able to record. And so during the first lockdown, I did a meditation and put it online, connected to country. My daughter also did one, and we used the sound as the background. So I had it. I had it anyway. Yeah, and I didn't realize I had it. So that was really nice. So I was able to just put it on. And I know it's on my phone now, so I can put my headphones on and just put it on and just deep breaths when I'm a bit over the top, you know, life gets in your way, and just be. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Mm. You say just be so simply, but what does that mean for you to just be?
Just be in that present moment, because you don't need to be anywhere else at that time. And just for me, it's about to start with, I concentrate on the breath and the deep breathing and the shallow. And then you just listen and whatever. Like you don't need to be anywhere. You don't need to think about anything. If something comes in, it's okay. It's a thought. Doesn't matter. It can do what it wants. Because it's a hard space to hold and it's a hard space to be in.
Yeah.
But it's taken me a long time to get there. But I love it. Mm. Yeah.
What was that journey like of that long time that it took you to get there?
I guess life in general. You know, there's so much rested on the busyness, and you've got to be busy all the time, and you've got to get stuff done, and you've got to be somewhere, and, you know, and you get caught up in all that. So it took a long time to, I guess, just be, and be okay with silence as well. And so I had to learn that as well, which is fine. And doing therapy helped. It helped me being able to sit just in. You know, people go, oh, it's awkward when it's silent. Well, I don't need to feel it. Do you? Like, you know.
Yeah. That's a big link between therapy and listening. Can you tell me more about that?
It's about, I guess, you know, when someone's not present. And so a lot of things I reflect on are my own experiences because you know them the best. And although you can go to uni and learn the theory, it's the practice for me about what it looks like. So I need those concrete, you know, you can learn all the theories you like, but it's about concrete work and how you put it into practice. Yeah. And so I think I got used to just pulling things apart and really listening to what's not being said rather than what's said all the time, because sometimes that's not what they want to say. So what's missing in the conversation, but also when people are taking a pause and reflecting, that's okay, because they're trying to figure out what they're going to say, and it's their space, not mine. And if they're if they're allowing me to hear their story, then I have to hold that. And there's nothing better than sitting with someone and they feel heard.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So how has holding that therapeutic space played a role in your life?
As in?
You holding it for others. Have you been doing that for long?
Yeah, about 20, maybe 30 years. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. How did that start for you? What drew you into that work?
Well, I just wanted to work. I wanted to start off wanting to work with my people. And really that. And so I ended up working in out-of-home care with our kids, our Aboriginal kids. And then it just went from there. And I love learning. Like, I love learning on my terms. I didn't like school. So I left at year 10. I was out, you know. And so I just started this journey of wanting to understand what was going on for our people and being able to unpack it and being able to sit with it and know why people react the way they do. Those sorts of, you know, I was really interested in that because there was a lot of stuff I was seeing that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And so that was my journey as well of my healing, I guess, as well. So I healed along that, which made me realise that I was able to also join the dots better, particularly with culture and how that can play a part. And so, yeah, I just kept going and then, you know, just I was at VACA for over 20 years. So I was principal prac of the state. But I heard a lot of stories, you know, and, you know, lots of stories of pain and sorrow and, you know, but if I can hold the space so they can tell their story and they feel a bit better when they're told this story, then so be it, you know. If I'm the trusted person, then that's, you know, that's what we'll do. So I don't see it as therapy. I say I'm a facilitator of healing. Because
a facilitator of healing.
Yeah. Well, they do the work, right? And you just guide it. You just gently guide it. So being able to read the space, I guess, is really important. And, you know, we've made mistakes along the way and that's how I've learned. I'd like to go back to some people, but I don't know where they are now and go, oh, I'm so sorry. But that's how you learn, and and you only know in that space what you know.
So how did that, I don't know, that realization come that you were a facilitator of healing?
People used to go, oh, you're a healer, you know, the healer. I'm not a healer. I'm just like, I don't sit comfortably with it. And, you know, I don't like the fact that I don't like the therapist word and you're coming to a counselor or a therapist because our mob's not going to come to that. Like, that's just not, you know, do you want to come for yarn? Yeah, I'll come for yarn, but, you know. And then I realised I don't really do anything, really, because they're telling the story and you're just guiding that. And then whatever they need, like it is whatever they need, you know. So, you know, someone who's come, oh, this is going on, I'd say, hang on a second. Do you want me to just listen? Do you want some advice at the end or do you want to work it out together at the end? Because I need to know what I'm listening for, that purpose, you know. And standing in therapy, what are you coming for? And what do you want to work on?
Yeah.
You know how to take a history? Oh, my God, you've got so much trauma. I'm going to work on this first, this. That's not for me to decide. And people don't want to touch some things, and that's okay. They will when they're ready. So, yeah.
Wow. That's I could just sit. I always say this, but I could just sit with that all night. Oh.
Yeah, it's I've learnt a lot off a lot of people. So it's like,
yeah,
it's the wisdom of other people and the people that I've held space for as well.
You know. Well, and I was about to ask you, you know, what does that guidance, like how do you do that guidance? But it really sounds like you're listening to the leading of the person you're listening to.
Yeah, yeah. And so I have studied a lot of Western modalities of therapy, and so I don't just use one. All of them come into it. It depends on the person, doesn't it?
You don't
know. You know, you can offer up things, and it's up to them. But it's creating that space of feeling heard and safe is exactly what you have to do first, because generally they come in with a really not, they're not safe. So
How do you create that place of safety?
Well, there's lots of things. So generally if someone comes in first and they want to tell their story, and you know, we've all heard it. You know when someone's really hot and they go, and you just go, stop, just stop. So I will stop someone from telling their story if they become heightened, because it's only going to traumatise them. And then we talk about things to relax them and calm them, and how we can. So there's also some techniques through EMDR therapy, which is an eye movement, rapid eye movement therapy. So we'll do some of that if they want to do that. Just lots of different ways about, you know, do you want to do this on country? Where do you want me to facilitate this? You know, where do you want to be? As well, is there anything you want to bring with you? I mean, use lots of possum skin, so that sensory feeling as well.
Yeah, wow. What role do you think place has in people being able to tell their story safely?
Oh, it depends on the person's connection. So, so again, have to be careful who we ask, because, you know, is there a space that's comfortable? Understanding if someone's stolen generation, they'll go, I don't belong anywhere. You know, so creating a space even in a room or wherever for them to feel like it's their place to start that sense of belonging. And what do you need in this space, and how can we make it look, and what does that mean to you? You know, whatever.
Yeah. And that, what you just named, to begin to create that sense of belonging, how does that unfold in the way you listen?
I guess, you know, it's about where they feel they fit in the world. And if they don't feel like they fit anywhere, they don't actually belong. And we're human, we want to belong.
Yeah.
We all want to belong. And I can't even imagine what that feels like, not to belong. You know, I've never not belonged. And we need, you know, human connection. You know, we need that. So I'll also do group work for people. So it may be that, oh, what's your passion? What do you do? Let's find a group for you to go to. Now, it could be anything. It could be bingo, for instance. But it may be that group of people go there all the time, joining some club, whatever that looks like. So, for instance, Stoll and Jen do a lot of work together, and that's their people. That's their, that's their sense of belonging, if they don't have it anywhere else,
Yeah, beautiful. So how has this work unfolded for you over time? Where has it taken you?
Absolutely everywhere. Lots of places. So I've actually been to Italy to study trauma recovery, and it was a Harvard course in Italy. Go figure, I don't know, but I just loved it, let me tell you. Did EMDR fellowship, so we study how culture plays a part in EMDR. So we went to America, Canada, and Cambodia. My work is with my people, so First Nations people. All over Australia as well. And also I do lots of sort of call it clinical cultural supervision for mob workers who work with their own people, because that's really, really difficult, particularly in white structures. So there's lots of stress involved in that. So I love helping and that space. I really like that when they feel they've a sense of relief. When we finish. So and then also I worked at SNAKE, which was the peak body for Secretariat of National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Childcare. So it did at-home care, so and early years for Aboriginal kids, and so advocacy to government and sector development. So I managed sector development, so did that for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And I also sat on lots of boards and, I don't know, lots of stuff. You know, lots of stuff. Still whilst going to uni, so doing my master's in social work. And, I just got appointed a commissioner at the Yuruk Justice Commission, so Australia's first truth-telling commission. It's just for Victoria. Yeah.
Can you tell us more about that, about this idea of truth-telling?
Yeah, so I guess there's a treaty underway in Victoria between, you know, First Peoples and the government. So there's an assembly of people and so they're doing a framework. But how can you do a framework if the truth isn't correct? So there's going to be a royal commission it's really broad terms of reference. So I've had to get my head around all this and had to do some work about owning on the commissioner now, which is really, you know, I'm just me and I find it, you know, really funny. It's from like 1788, so historic, right through to contemporary, and about how the systems have been destructive of our people, you know, and they particularly name genocide, child protection, policing, youth detention. It's all in there. So the stories are going to be tough. Like they're not going to be there's going to be good ones and there's going to be ones of hope and resilience and, you know, and some amazing, stories of people, you know. And part of the reason I applied or put an expression of interest in was because that's what I'm trained to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my people. Sometimes I go to worst case scenario. So my thing is if I go to worst case scenario and then work backwards, we're able to figure our way through this together as Victorians. And it's not just about – it's about rewriting the narrative, but it's also bringing everybody along because it's uncomfortable. It's going to be uncomfortable. You know, people are going to be uncomfortable, but it's a truth, you know, that a painful truth. And if we can start owning it, we can start changing systems, people can start healing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what does it look like for us to listen into that pain so that we can hear the truth?
It's being able to sit in uncomfortable, and that takes practice. And it's also, so you know when you do something and you just go, I'm not good enough to do this, I can't do this, what that sort of feeling, when actually if you sit back and think about it, it's not about you, it's about the process, it's about this external. And when you bring yourself into it, you start feeling your own emotions and what it means for you. When it's about us as a collective.
Yeah.
And so you can have empathy and you can feel the pain and you can have tears, but at the other side you have to act and you have to come along on that walk and that, you know, beside us or behind us, wherever we want you, and listening, you know, that really – deep being able to listen, because I think people think they're going to lose something, but actually no, you're going to gain the oldest living culture in the world. You're going to be able to gain knowledges that you probably wouldn't have heard of before. You're going to hear pain, but you're going to hear, you know, how do you turn that into a good thing at the end? Because it's resilience. Yeah. And it means we're safeguarding for our future generations that they don't have to go through what we had to go through.
Yeah. And I really like what you said about that listening needs to turn into action.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we can go straight into action without listening, and sometimes all we do is listening and then we never move from that place. How do you see the two coming together?
So this is Montesquieu's first truth-telling, but I think one of the differences is treatise frameworks running alongside. So as we all inform treaty, so once treaty gets set up, there's your vehicle to push the recommendations through, and that's never been done before. And I guess it's so broad. The terms of reference are so broad. It's exciting. It's overwhelming. It's, you know, every day someone's reminding us of something new and I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, no. You know, do you know what I mean? So, but I'm also excited. I'm also excited for my daughter and her generation of what they're going to have these opportunities to sit in spaces and be safe, you know, where we haven't been able to do that. So,
How does your experience as a mother shape how you listen in these spaces?
Things changed when I become a mum, as you'd always. It just does. You just become this whole, you can't be self-centered, can you? And you can't be, it's not about you anymore. It's about someone else. And I guess knowing how much you can actually love a human being that you never thought possible, and particularly working in the space of child protection, gave me a lot more empathy for some of these mums and you know, stuff they were going through, what they were being through, you know, and being able to manage that with them and navigate that with them. But also feeling their pain. Like I used to say, for instance, to workers, I go, oh, we're going to drop the kid off at the placement. And I'd go, it's their first night, remember? And they go, yeah, imagine how scared they are. And if it was people with kids, I'd say, imagine dropping your kid off to someone they don't know. Treat them like they were yours. You know, and I had to think clinically a lot in that space, and that's how I've helped myself a lot. You know, I've done some stuff around child death, but that's also about how do I honour their story and how do we change a system so it doesn't happen again. So a lot of people go, oh, how do you do that? And, well, let's honour their story. Let's honour what even after they've got to say. And how did this happen? And let's not let this happen again. And I think that's how I work, sort of that space as well. Yeah. So
honouring people's stories seems like a thread that runs through everything that you do. What does that look like to honour someone's story for you?
It's for someone to feel heard. I don't know how many times I've gone out to sort of an auntie's, and I've had to go out because it's work, but they'll give you a cup of coffee, and I don't even drink coffee, but you take it because you don't want to offend them. And then you just listen, and you know no one's ever sat there and listened for that long or been able to hear them. It's actually not even listening. You know what? It's being heard.
It's being heard.
Mm.
Yeah. What do you notice in yourself when you see, when you witness someone being heard?
I just have all these emotions, and most of them are human emotions. Like, what? You have to contain yourself as a therapist, right? Because you can't, you know, I'm all first for crying with people and, you know, showing the love. But, you know, sometimes you've got to hold it for them. And so, you know, you just see a lot, you see the lightness when you leave. Because I don't believe you should ever leave somebody worse than they came to you. They should leave better. And if that takes 5 hours of sitting in a room with them, then that's what it takes.
Yeah.
You may have fallen asleep by then, but, you know, no one, you know, everybody deserves something, whatever that may be and whatever they're looking for. And, you know, if I can facilitate one little bit of that in their life, and that's what I want to do.
Beautiful. Such a gift to be heard and to offer that to another person. Yeah, my heart's just resonating so much with, the way that you weave yourself in and out of people's stories and the gift that you leave them, you know, when you've been in their presence.
But isn't it an honor for someone to share their story with you? Like, they don't have to tell you. And I'm always mindful that I'm intruding, or when I was working in that space, I was intruding in someone else's life and understanding they had other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it's not just about this, and it's never about that one thing. It's the, you know, everything going on. And you'd go in and they'd be, oh, you're coming in to tell me, well, what's going on? Well, you're not going to do anything about it. Well, can't if you don't tell me. Let's work with it. Let's just see what we can do. You know, people will tell you what they want to tell you when they first meet you. And then once they go on, and the more they tell you, you realize they're feeling safe, and that's what you want people to feel. And, you know, I've worked with too many people who feel unsafe. So it's about safety. You know, it's just what we need to do, I think. That's just the way I see it.
How much is your sense of safety connected to being able to create that space of safety for others?
Oh, I know. If I'm not doing well, I wouldn't do any of, if I'm not traveling. So I need to know myself. And I guess, you know, I've spaces where I don't feel safe and, or I don't want to be. And it's about asking people where they want to do stuff. And we've been talking about that, how people, when they give their story, where will that be? And that'll be up to people. We can offer options, you know, whether it's down on the riverbank with an elder, it's at an elder's house, or whether it's in a big group meeting, or who knows where it could be. But people need to feel, because you need to feel in control. And when you tell your story, you feel vulnerable. And you can't truly tell your story if you don't feel safe. Like, it's all intertwined. And, you know, people have stories to be told.
Yeah.
And they're sacred. They're sacred stories. They're theirs.
Absolutely. How do you honour that sacredness when someone's shared their story with you, whether that's just you or in a public setting?
Oh, I always say thank you for sharing, because it's hard to share yourself, because sometimes you're bearing stuff that, you know, and I always check in with people, particularly in a public setting, before we leave. Are you okay? You know, that was a lot. Thank you for sharing. You know, I thank them again, and just acknowledge it. Acknowledge, you know, the braveness in them telling you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it takes so much courage to put yourself out there to be heard and take that risk to know whether you will be heard or whether you'll be silenced again.
Yep. And then also having the trust that, you know, particularly when I was working, it was like, you know, if you tell me things where you're going to cause harm to yourself or others, I have to do something about it. These are my bottom lines for kids. If you tell me something that I have to do something about, I'm going to do it. That's it. Because your safety and your kids' safety is really important to me and those around you. And that's honesty.
Yeah.
I'd hate to get into a story, they tell me something and I have to stop them and say, well, you know, that's a bit.
What is the role of honesty in listening?
I guess it's whatever you offer up that you can do and deal with. Because, you know, how many times do people say, offer you something? But it's also not about giving your advice. Like, who am I to tell you? Or who am I to join and say, oh, my God, that happened to me too, but mine was 20 times worse, let me tell you. Like, people don't, they're there to tell, you know, and then you lose them. Like, or I say, oh, I know how you feel. Actually, no, I don't know how you feel.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel, but that must be really hard. Or do you want to tell me how that felt for you?
I love that question so much. do you want to tell me how that felt for you?
Yep.
Yeah, I think particularly because so often when we are being heard, it's what happened, not how did you feel about what happened.
Yep. Because yeah. when you're traumatized, you go into a space of disconnecting with your emotions. And yeah. so you need to start to learn to bring them back. And sometimes it's like, oh, how does that feel? Oh, it felt all right. Can you feel it in your body? Where did you feel it in your body? You know, I've done a lot of work, poor daughter, I use her as a test case. And so I have this thing about where do you feel it? She always feels it in her heart. Mum, I said, well, how does that make you feel? I feel upset about what you yelled at me. Right, okay. Well, I raised my voice, that's yelling, by the way. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. It hurts my heart. I'm like, oh, my God, you're a therapist, daughter.
Yeah, how beautiful.
So understanding where you hold stuff in your body is really important as well, because you hold everything in, particularly if you held it in for a long time. What comes out of that? Your body reacts, so there's your health issues as well. So people need a space, a safe space to – and people are ready to listen and give advice or compare.
Yeah.
And you can't compare because everybody's trauma or everything or anything you've been through. So it might be, I don't know, someone's been through something really big, like someone's died, you know, all of a sudden, and it's quite, you know, and then someone's gone through something else, I don't know, something small, like they've lost their purse and they've got no money for the week. But they could be reacting exactly the same way, depending on their resiliency, what they've been through in their life, or, you know, it doesn't make it invalid how big, and it's not a trauma off, you know.
Yeah.
My trauma's worse than your trauma, or my story's better than your story.
Mm.
They're actually equal.
Yeah. What do you think the impact is of people not being heard? Do you think that's linked as to why when one person's trying to share their story, the next person brings their story as a comparison, because there's just not enough, there hasn't been enough space for both people to be heard?
I don't know. People are funny creatures, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think people don't know how to listen. Or they want to say, I'm hearing you, because I've been through that too.
Yeah.
Right? And people are and maybe that's their way of connecting.
I
don't think people mean malice by it, or I really think it's unintentional.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not easy just to sit there and listen, like actively be in that space and listen. Particularly these days, how many people are on their phones, or like something's always happening. You know, my dog even, so I was on my phone the other day, and she knocks the phone out of my hands now. And it's like, look at me, pat me, I'm here.
Yeah.
And that's when I know. And your kids are good at telling you too. Kids are good at telling you. Get off it. Come and tell me. Hey, look, I'm here. I say that to her now. She's on the iPad all the time. But, yeah, it's hard to sit still.
Mm. I just feel like so much of what you're saying about how we listen to others, you know, it's hard to sit still, and then it takes me back to what you shared at the beginning of sitting by the river and just sitting still and just listening. How much do you think our ability to listen to ourselves is connected to our ability to listen to others?
Oh, I think a lot, because there's stuff we don't want to admit about ourselves, or there's stuff we don't want to think about, and so we suppress that. And so that's all in the way there, because as soon as someone mentions that, you're triggered by it.
Yeah.
You know, so people don't like themselves very much sometimes, actually a lot of the time. And it takes a lot to like yourself. And see how your worthiness of just being, you know.
Yes.
It took me a long time.
Can you tell us a little bit about that journey for you?
Yeah, it's a long one, and it still happens. It's still, you know, I still question things now, and then I'll have to go and work through it again. But it's a, I guess, as an Aboriginal woman, and the, you know, a fair skin Aboriginal woman, people have questioned that, and then they question your ability in that. So, you know, being the only Aboriginal person at a school, you know, and you do something, and that's because you're Aboriginal, or so it's, it makes you don't want to be, and then you don't like yourself, and why did it have to be Aboriginal, and you know, and you go through. So when you start, society tells you a lot about yourself, right? Mm. Tells you a lot, and you're female. So an Aboriginal female is probably at the bottom lowest rung here when we're talking about, you know, where we fit. And so you start to question your ability to do stuff. And I would do stuff and people go, oh, my God, that's amazing. And I'd go, oh, no, I just did it. And then I'd also say, did I get that because I'm Aboriginal? Was that like a token gesture? Or, you know, people go, oh, we've done this, we've got this class, and it's, this class is for Aboriginal people. And I go, no, I want to do the mainstream one just to prove to them, whoever them is, I don't even know who them is, that I could do it, you know. And then I got to a point where I'm like, I would start, why am I feeling like this? And I blame myself. It's because I, and then I don't know, it just slowly started as I was doing the training and the work. And you got to look in, right? Oh, God, that's hard. Mm. Oh, my God, that's painful. Worst part ever, right? Because you don't want to talk about it. I'm like, don't. Do we have to do ourselves? And like, yeah. I'm like, oh, this is going to, you know. So you have to look in, and you have to look at yourself, and you have to go, what is it? And it's those microaggressions consistently, but it's not me. It's their behaviour. It's not mine at all. And so I feel, we all filter things through our own sort of lens. And I've had to filter going, that's, you know, that's you, not me. That's, you know, because you always get held down. Like there's been, and you go, well, I'm trying. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not good enough. And then you get to, you know, and through this whole process, I'm great, by the way. I'm just fabulous. And I'm, you know, I can do this. I'm not, and, you know, my Aboriginality is my superpower, you know, and my culture that comes with me and those thousands of years of ancestors and, you know, my beautiful family that, like, this all comes with me.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything to offer that's terrible. Maybe it's not up to your standards, but that's okay. I'm still okay. And someone said something to me the other day and I was like, what did I say? And they went, stop it, because you naturally go back to it. I'm like, stop it. That was about them. And that was about them feeling uncomfortable in that conversation and then being challenged about it. And then I put it back on, what have I done? And that's when I go, no, don't fall back into that trap. Because it's easy to.
Yeah. So then how do you think kind of navigating all that has then impacted how you witness and hear others?
I think understanding that how other people are influenced by outside, how they're parented, that it's everything, how, who their friends are, where they live, how they think society perceives them, male, female, not, you know, whatever you are, and the media plays a lot into it, and we, you know, and so these stereotypes that we have of each other and what things are and what they look like is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fair to do that to people. And particularly vulnerable people take that on a lot more. So I'm aware of that, and I'm aware of when I'm, you know, and it's usually the start is building someone's self-esteem, that they are worthy, that they are lovable, they are a kind person. Because the first thing people, you can, they don't say it, but you get the undercurrent is they're unlovable, you know, and everybody deserves some love, you know.
Yeah. How do you begin to show someone that they're lovable?
Because generally when you're down at your lowest, you can't see the good things. you know, and they may tell you their story and you can point back, oh, my God, did you do that? So in the midst of all that, you went and did that. And they'll go, yeah. So think about it. All this stuff going on around you and you did that one thing, how amazing is that? I don't know how you did that. And that's not, and you wouldn't be lying, but you pick that one thing that they did, there's something good there, you know.
Yeah.
In a story, there's those bits of strength and those bits of resilience and grabbing those out and then starting to change the narrative.
Mm. Yeah.
And what's working in your life? Do more of what's working. Do more of that good stuff that's working.
Yeah. That I love that idea of changing the narrative through listening.
Mm.
How do you see that unfold in people's lives?
It takes a while because, you know, our thoughts are so ingrained. EMDR is good for changing how we think and perceive ourselves, and that's why. And it does it quite quickly too. And they do it themselves. So that I love that. But generally it takes a while. So you get people to do more of what they like doing or more of what they currently do good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so much in everything that you're sharing. I know I'm going to listen to this quite a few times just to soak it all in.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about, you know, bearing witness to people's stories and really hearing them, what do you think is most important?
That you're understanding what they're telling you, that you can, you know how people go around and around, and that's okay because they can go round and around. And I hate that feeding back. So what I'm hearing is, like, I really don't like that. And so sometimes if I'm not sure what it is they're getting at, I say, what do you want me to take from that? What do you want me to understand in that?
Yeah.
Because there's so much, you know, you'll say there's so much in it. What do you want me to take from that? What part do you really want me to take and really understand?
And that comes back to how guided you are by the person that you're listening to. In everything that you've named, you're so led by the person's story and the honour within that.
But it's their process. It's not mine, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm far from perfect, by the way. Let's just say that. And we all make mistakes, and that's about, you know, honouring those. I mean, I've rang people afterwards or clients afterwards and say, or when, you know, they've come back in, I was thinking about you this week and I said to you da-da-da-da-da and they'll go, yeah. And so I thought about it, and that's really wrong. Like, that's not okay to say that, or I actually didn't mean that. What I meant was da-da-da. But you're also teaching people that you're not perfect and that's okay to not be perfect. Yeah.
How do they respond in that, like, that circumstance?
Depending on who it is, we'll have a discussion about it, of why I felt like that or why I would. And some people are just shocked and go, what? You know, what? Yeah, you shouldn't have, you know. And you, or even you thought about me. Lots of you, what, you thought about me when I wasn't here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
actually, I did.
Do you carry the stories that people share with you? Once you've heard someone's story, where does it sit with you?
They're all in there. They're all in there. And sometimes I'll be doing something to remind me of somebody, or someone will tell a story and I'll be similar to somebody else's, which will bring their story into it. And if it's similar to someone else's, I'll think about how they healed or how they would take me and see if they want to take the same path. They might want to take something different. But I actually learn so much. Like, it's a privilege to hear a story, but how much you learn about people is, and humankind, and what people are capable of and what people are scared of, and what people take for granted as well. So coming
absolutely.
In, one of the things coming in this, into this commission, I hold the story of thousands of children, of Aboriginal children, and they will be with me throughout this, because there's got to be a place for justice at the end, and there's got to be a place for change. And they're the ones, those stories actually are part of what's driven me to to this space. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that, I'm going to ask you one of your questions, but how does that feel in your body to carry the story of thousands of children?
Oh, I'm honoured. I was talking to someone, and I didn't realise this the other, it was about a month ago, and she's like, oh, what did you do? And da-da-da, I can't even remember what we're doing. And I told her what I did. She said, how long have you done that for? And I said, and she said, seriously, I have, most people are worn out by now and they won't do that work anymore. She goes, I don't know how you hold it. And to be honest, I don't know. I just keep myself well enough to know I can. And that if it affects me, then I'll go and do my whatever I need to do for me, rather than take it along into everyone else's sessions. And I've got to keep myself well. I've got a child, you know, that I need to enjoy. And you know, sometimes you see a lot of terrible stuff. Well, I see the reality when I come home and she's like, where's my food? Or let's go to the park, or let's do something, you know. And so we go and enjoy. I actually probably think I enjoy those moments more. And I know, like, I know how blessed I am to be where I am. Not that I've worked bloody hard to get here, but, you know, but just, I guess I'm honoured. Honoured would be the word.
Yeah. Oh, it's so significant. Yeah. So what do you, like, how do I ask this? Yeah, what do you hope from this commission? What do you hope is going to come from it or through it?
I hope there's justice and someone's, because we, you know, someone's held accountable, that systems change that keep suppressing our people, because we can't get true healing until the systems around us change. So that self-determination for our people. And I hope these recommendations get implemented.
Yeah.
And I hope we as a commission can be really solid in the and hear the voices and what they're saying to be able to get out what's needed. Because, again, this is, you know, I'm not a commission, I'm a facilitator of all these voices we're going to hear around Victoria and bringing them together and creating that narrative. And, you know, I hope we can educate the non-Aboriginal people and they can come on this journey as well. Because this is historic, you know.
It's huge. So what does it look like for those of us that are non-Aboriginal to come on the journey?
I don't know yet, and I'll tell you when we get there. But we are going to do lots of education around as we start finding out. And as, you know, as you start learning along the journey, I guess part is to bring other people along with you, because we all need to be there. And look, to, you know, people are, there's a lot of racism. That's a bit like, I'll be, and it's probably once a week I'll hear or be on the end of a racist remark. I don't want that for our kids anymore. I want people to understand the journey that we've come along and then where we are now. We're not going to take your backyards for land. You know, we're not going to, that's not going to happen, you know. But I want, you know, people like my dad who never got to see this and my nan, you know, the first commission into sort of self-determination and land rights was one of my ancestors, and he went, and that was the first time Aboriginal people gave testimony in a, and so, you know, I want to carry the work, that work through. And I think, you know, being able to do, we don't know the outcome, and it's going to, you know, it's a bit scary. I don't know where it's going to go, and we don't know. But we need everybody on board to be able to do it together. You know, just reaching the people, I guess reaching the voices that haven't been heard and reaching the people that sort of have never wanted to know. So I said, oh, it doesn't matter, it's in the past. Being able to change a mindset, which is really hard. And people don't, you don't lose anything, you know. You're not going to, we're not taking anything off you. You are giving us back dignity and pride in who we are. Do you know what I mean? So,
yes. So from that sense of, you know, that community that's not listening, that you know, is not hearing the truth and the stories of your people, how can those of us that are listening be part of that, yeah, changing that, you know, that reality for, you know, like you said, changing the culture of racism in our country so that, you know, our children aren't participating or bearing witness to that for our, you know, our kids.
Well, it's finding the space that you can do that in. And so there's a quote, I can't remember the quote, I'm hopeless at remembering quotes, but there's one about, you know, I'm not in the room but you're still going to stick up for me. So being able to be the, even if you're the only one in the person in the room that stands up for whatever was racist was said and saying that's not okay, that's helping. And being able, but also being able to explain why it's not okay. And I think if you can give people understanding and explanations, they can actually, you know, being able to, you know, there might be a space at work where you can do something. There might be a space at your children's school or with your children or, you know, getting in touch with your local community. Is there anything I can do, you know, and then learning from where you live, whatever that, you know, looks like, because it's going to look different and it's what people are comfortable doing as well. Yeah.
It's so significant that, you know, this work has been a part of your lineage and now you're here in 2021, you know, on the commission and representing these stories with honour. What's that like to hold that history in your body right now?
Yeah, that's a big responsibility and it sits there and it weighs heavy because, you know, these are great people that before me, you know, and strong leaders and strong women, and you're like, you know, so I'm letting that settle because I'm finding my space within. We've just started, we're just setting up in the commission and where it sits with me and where my role and getting to know the other commissioners, you know, it's all new, so we're all feeling our way and settling in and navigating the space, I guess.
Yeah. And what does that look like for you as a facilitator of healing?
This is my time to get me in the space and to get me okay and to get me comfortable and understanding my role in this. You know, people that know me well or work with me got to have a purpose. So what is the purpose when we go individually, when we go and do stuff? So what is my purpose when I come in and hear this testimony of this person? It's to listen.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, and then if I'm over here doing whatever, what is my purpose there? Education. What is my purpose? So you're going to have to wear many hats, and also bringing everything together and thinking strategically and big and, it's a lot.
A lot. And how do you weave between those spaces? You know, in one moment you're listening, in the next moment you're educating. How do you transition between the two, listening and speaking, speaking and listening?
Well, it's the purpose of the moment. So what is your purpose in that moment?
Yeah.
You know when you go into meetings and people have meetings for the sake of having, and I still always go, stop, what's our purpose here?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be in a meeting for the sake of being in a meeting. Like what? Or you go off on, this is our purpose for today. We can do that later. You know, this is it. But having your that word is so meaningful, your purpose. What is your purpose in that moment? And then it can bring you back to where you're supposed to be.
Oh, well, I would love to bring you back down the track to hear how the commission is unfolding, if you would be up for another conversation, because I just would really love to continue to hear your journey and be part of that learning and listening.
Yes, well, it's a big learning curve for me too. So, I'm happy to, and it's just, you know, have a look. I think we're starting to get an online presence and we're starting to get our website up and things. So,
yeah,
you know, just follow the journey and see where we're at and what we're doing and if you can be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thank you. And I'll share some of that, those links in the show notes as well so people can listen and follow along.
Yeah, not a problem.
So I have two questions that I ask everyone to kind of close the conversation. And it's coming back to this idea of our listening way. I think we all, you know, we're all unique and we all listen, you know, in according to our individual stories and what we've experienced and what makes us us. So I'd love to hear from you if there's a word that you think might describe your listening way.
A word that describes my listening way. Just being in the moment.
Yeah. I can feel that even just every time I speak to you, I just feel so held in presence by you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the other word that comes to mind is just honour, the way that you honour people through listening. Yeah, so significant. So for people that are wanting to, maybe there's, you know, part of your story that they're resonating with around listening in the present moment, or they're hearing that and they're just like, that's so far from how I listen, but I want to learn more about that. How can they begin to play with that idea of listening in the present moment?
So we have, and you've probably heard of Didiri, which is an Aboriginal way of deep listening. And so we've got a different word for it in every language, but it's about listening with your whole body. So you're not just looking at someone and just hearing it, right? You're actually feeling it. You're sensing it. You're looking at them. You're like, there's everything's happening. You don't even need to be looking at people, right, because that's intimidating half the time. But just being, you know, just being with somebody. I mean, just being with somebody and being able to be empathetic and then just listen with your whole body.
Wow. What does that even – I'm not meant to ask follow-up questions, but I said I have to know. What does that look like to listen with your whole body?
You know when you're listening to somebody and they tell you something and it sort of hits you somewhere in your body, and rather than going, what's that about? Oh, God, what's that about? It's making me – go with it. Just go with it because it's hitting you because it's theirs. It's their pain you're feeling, and that's okay. You know, we're all taught these Western models of therapy where you know, everyone knows I've got a kid. Everybody knows my story. My clients, everybody's got my phone number. Like, everybody knows everything about me. And so they should. Like, you don't want to come to somebody. I'll share. They'll say, oh, you know, if they say, oh, I'm the worst parent ever. I yelled at my kid this morning. I'll say, yeah, well, you want to know what I said to her because she wouldn't get in the car? You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And joining people and just being, it's really, there's so many words to describe it. And I think one of the biggest things is non-judgment.
Yeah.
Who are we to judge each other?
Yeah.
By the way, this all sounds idealistic, but I'm not in this space all the time because you can't.
Yeah.
Like you cannot be this space all of the time. And so being able to say it's okay when you're outside that space to watch Married at First Sight or just veg on the couch or play with your dog or have an argument with your daughter. You, do you know what I mean? Like, we're human.
Yes, absolutely.
And so by doing all that, you're able to come back in this space to clear it all and go, right. And that feels better because you've been out in that world that gives you all this stuff and you feel dirty and it's like a cleansing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming back to that rain, that water.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. Oh, well, thank you so much.
So we'll put that link for Miriam Rose's Didiri up if you like.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much for everything that you've shared.
You're welcome.
I'm taking away so much and, Yeah, I'm really going to sit with so much of what you've shared and just be with it. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me. You know, I love a chat. Love a chat.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the next one. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you resonated with Sue-Ann's listening way, you can explore her work at www.sueannhunter.com. In the show notes, we've also included some links to two meditations on connection to country, Dardidi, and the Yurok Justice Commission. You can find it all in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to explore your listening way, we are curating a downloadable resource that brings together the wisdom from all the guests in this season. You can find it through our website, thelisteningsquad.com/podcast. If this conversation has resonated with you, you can find out more about our work at The Listening Squad, where we hold circles, programs, and strategic retreats. You can also find me at The Listening Mama, where we hold matrescence circles, programs, and sessions. We love hearing your reflections too, so feel free to message us on Instagram at The Listening Squad. We dream of a listening revolution where every person is heard. So how could you listen to yourself or someone today through your listening?